A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Do, 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 do,
feeling
do,
your nipples?
Yeah. Okay. You know, I wore a real lady bra today.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Just for me?
Just for you, Julia.
Ooh, that's wow. The bee in my bonnet.
Hey.
I'm just kidding. Or the bonnet in my button. Apparently,
that's
Julia Weldon doesn't
have the bonnet. It's the float in your
boat.
It's
the float in my boat.
Oh my God, I got it completely wrong.
Yeah, bee
yeah,
is
there's
bad.
No button.
Bee is bad.
Bee is bad.
Buttons are neutral.
Buttons are non-existent.
Hello, welcome back to the Female Gaze Podcast. I'm Jessie Katz.
I'm Alana Rodriguez.
Jumped right on it, baby.
Yeah, I was ready. I was hiding in the wings.
And joining us in studio today is musician, actor,
sexy,
thirst trap expert, which we'll get to, Julia Weldon, my buddy, my pal,
yes.
My fave. What's up, J-Dubs?
Hey, guys. How
Hi.
Are you?
Hi,
that
how
was
are you?
The best intro I've ever gotten.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Yeah. We're so stoked to have you here today.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. You are a friend of mine, but I was an admirer first, and we've done a little potting together before. You came on Soul Sisters, my last show, but we focused on music then, and today we're going to dig into some other shit with you,
mm-hmm.
A side of you that I don't know as well, because I haven't grilled you on the mic about it yet.
So yeah, that's how we really get to know each
that's
other.
That's how we really, you know, it's all like fun and games when we're just hanging out having drinks. But when I have you on record on the mic, then I get the real dirt.
That's when it's real.
That's
oh,
why we're
yeah.
saying we need to do drinks on the pod next time. No hot rosé. We want cold bevs.
Okay.
I'll bring some cold bevs.
Don't worry. We're going to get deep with or without alcohol today. Don't set the bar so low for yourself, Lonnie.
Lonnie.
God, fuck me.
Okay. So before we get to Julia's illustrious career and other shenanigans, we're going to start with our favorite.
Yeah.
Float your boat.
Toot toot.
And be in your bonnet.
Buzz buzz, bitch.
Okay. I'm going to start us off today. Ready?
Yes.
My float in my boat this week is a story that I just heard about on the radio and then did a bunch of Googling about because it was so delicious to me. So per CNN, a judge in Missouri, Lawrence County Judge Robert George, has sentenced a man named David Berry Jr. to a year in jail for illegally killing deer. So this was like a major deer poacher who they finally tracked down and arrested. He was especially notorious for taking only the heads of the deer and their antlers and leaving the rest of their bodies to rot. Starting us off on a really lovely note here. You're welcome. So the judge sentenced this man to a year in jail. And on top of that, added the stipulation that while he's in jail, he's required to watch the Walt Disney movie Bambi at least once a month.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yes.
He is going to have to watch Bambi's mother being killed by a
fuck
hunter
yes.
at least wow. 12 times.
That is some creative retribution
right?
from the judge.
Hell yeah.
It really touched me. And also, so I first heard this on the radio, like I said, and they started off by just playing the audio from that scene in the movie.
Can
and
you
I
reenact
was,
it for us?
I was like on my way out the door to walk my dog and just all of a sudden crying in my doorway because I haven't, you know, accessed that
movie
in
fucked
a long time.
Me up as a kid. It fucked me up and I haven't seen it since.
Fucked us all up. And maybe that's why you're not a deer poacher.
That's exactly why.
Has this man seen Bambi before? I don't know. I would actually love to imagine that he never saw Bambi, and that's why he went down this really horrible path.
That's his source.
That's the source.
The source of his evil
poacher.
Hunting is just like, it's a, I'm not into it.
I think it's
the end.
So fucking weird. My college boyfriend actually literally just posted a photo on Instagram yesterday. It's him in a lineup with like a shit ton of rednecks, seemingly. And everyone's holding like a deer, dead deer in each hand, just lifting it up. And the hashtag was hunting season.
Ooh.
And I was like, you are vile. Like,
was he into that when you were dating?
Yeah, but I also wasn't into him when we were dating. So that barely bothered me. But
isn't
it
funny
vile.
When you see your ex and you're like,
yes.
Another reason I don't like you.
Yes. And why did I ever date you?
Yeah.
The deer.
Yeah.
I should call him. Aww. Been a long time. Watch Bambi.
Yeah, you should warn him. Yeah. Warn him if he ever gets caught.
Have you ever seen Bambi?
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my float your boat.
Fuck yeah.
Okay.
Fuck yeah.
Is it my turn?
Awesome. A-Rod, let's hear it.
Okay, my float, my boat this week. Super simple, super quick, and you're all going to tell me that I'm a terrible queer, but I just discovered Ani DeFranco last night. I know.
Oh,
and
my God.
I am a fucking,
hey, what
I know.
Is,
bringing it
what
back to Soul Sisters.
Yeah. I was going to say, what do Julia Weldon and Ani DeFranco have in common? Probably a lot, but including both having been on Soul Sisters.
Fuck. Yes. First of all, I'm such a music junkie. I fucking love music. My dad raised me on it. We learned how to play instruments from the second we were kids. But clearly, I was not a great little queer little baby because I heard this.
Never
and
too
I was
late.
Like,
never too
it's
late.
It's never
for
too
Ani.
Late. And last night, I felt reborn. She's a fucking awesome human.
Wait,
and
what did
anyone,
you listen to? I'm so curious.
32 Flavors came on my Discover playlist.
Oh my God, how interesting. How old are you? Am I allowed to ask
27,
you?
Yeah, you're
on the record, on the pod. That me. Is really interesting to think about discovering an artist like that that's
yes.
like epic to
yes.
so many queers like a little later because you're like, I listen to songs that I was obsessed with of hers back then mm-hmm. and it's weird because it brings me back to this like really melodramatic time.
Totally.
But she's just,
totally.
It's universal.
Yeah.
Any age. Yeah.
She brought me back and I had like a moment, I was just like lying in my bed, just like mood, lights were off, incense. And I was like, fuck
totally.
Yeah, this floats my boat forever.
Luckily she has a million albums.
A
you
million,
can dig into.
I know.
And
yeah.
they, you know, they move it beyond that melodramatic thing.
Ugh. So that's it.
I think this is actually, this will get us off on a tangent, so I'll keep it short. But I was having drinks last week with a queer friend who is 22 and didn't know who Carrie Brownstein was when I mentioned her. And I was like, Slater Kinney? And she was like, huh? And I was like,
Portlandia?
Huh?
22.
Yeah. Then Portlandia kind of rang a distant bell for her. And
a lot of people don't know Slater Kinney.
Mm-hmm. But I'm like, don't you feel obligated as a lesbian to like catch up on the queer canon and understand where all of this came from?
Sometimes
that's
you don't
a whole,
know.
That's
they don't.
That's a whole other podcast.
Agreed.
The queer canon.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I think
or
it's
segment?
Also
new segment.
I think it's also a podcast about millennials not giving shit about history. But we can get to that another day. I'm technically a millennial, but only by like a year.
Ditto. It's so weird that we're millennials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we know our history. Anyway, never too late. As we said, never too late. Welcome to the club.
I know though. Shit, okay? I know shit.
I know.
I'm catching up, y'all. It's fun.
All right, J-Dubs, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just going to disclaimer, I'm bad at this stuff, but came up with some good stuff for you.
What's this stuff?
Cheesy segments. So, okay. Yes.
What's floating your boat?
Floating my boat is Viola Davis.
Oh.
And it's going to sound weird, but I heard two interviews this week. And my partner was listening to one over the weekend while we were just like futzing around the kitchen. And it was Viola Davis talking about being an actor in a really rough industry. And then Lucas Hedges yesterday on NPR. I was like driving somewhere listening to NPR and he was like just super sweet and like kind of sweet. And it's interesting because he's been playing... Like he's playing a queer character in Boy Erased, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm interested to see the way that his career develops. So that was just like interesting, and it made me like just happy. And he also like talked about his mother in the sweetest way. Oh. And then he
was queer in Lady Bird too.
Yes, and he was queer in Lady Bird, and he has come out as being like, I don't know what I am, which I think is right. interesting because for like a very, he's also like in so many things. He's working on fucking everything right now.
It's a thing
he
about
has
a
two
few
more
of
movies
these young
out.
Actors who are in a lot of, so like Timothée Chalamet
yeah.
is also a little bit ambiguous about his sexuality.
Yeah, totally.
Ezra Miller. Like
oh,
a bunch
Ezra
of
Miller
young
is super out
queer.
As queer and non-binary, actually.
Oh, that's oh. right. That's right.
Yeah, and I was actually in a film with him.
Oh. Hey.
And Zoe Kravitz
oh.
in like a long time ago called Beware the Gonzo, an indie film. And he and her were both weird with me. They were dating at the time. She winked at me before the take. And I got like really flustered.
Oh my God. I would have blown
See,
the entire rest of the shoot day.
Oh yeah. I know. I was like, oh God. Huge boner for you.
Huge.
And you just winked at me. I probably fucked up my line.
Are
and
we
then,
married?
And then he was being weird, but he was only 17. He was like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, I heard you're from Jersey. I don't know. I tried to like talk to him. I don't know. It was like really weird. And then at the cast party, the rap party was huge. They like kept the open bar going forever. And he was just such a superstar. Like
yeah.
he was before he blew up. And
yeah.
Okay. Anyway. Sorry. I'm so ADD as Jesse knows. So taking it back to Viola Davis, because yeah. that was the really interesting thing that uh-huh. kind of like that I heard this week that really made me happy is that I mean, also, it's kind of like a little bit of a mixy, right? But so she was just talking about, obviously, like the underrepresentation of like just being a black woman in the industry, and as someone who is a part of a group that's underrepresented, it was so interesting to hear her so I identify as trans, non-binary. I identify as a lot of things. Trans, non-binary. I use she, her, and they, them. You know, all my agents use she, her. which, I mean, some they actually alternate, which is awesome. And they just get what I do so hard. So, like, my pronouns are actually less important to me sometimes than people, like, understanding my gender.
Okay, I want to come back to that with you because I've been wanting to talk to you about this.
Totally. But the Viola Davis thing was so interesting. She was talking about how, I think it was for How to Get Away with Murder. She knew. So she's super successful at this point already. She knew for a fact that two other white women had been offered the role. She was asked to read for the role. She told her manager, I'm not doing that. And I think it's so, it was so like beautiful to hear her talk about her boundaries and like as a black woman that's just still not respected as much as white women in the industry. But also, you know, she talked about just like holding on to your sense of like who you are. Like before she mentioned this fact, she talked about like holding on to who you are, knowing who you are. And even if you do, it's just still a really rough industry. So,
but she said, I'm not doing that. Like, I think she refused, or she felt like she was a token read, or
no, because when you are asked to read for a role and you're not offered the role, it means they don't trust, they don't know, they're not certain about you, they don't trust you.
Oh, like they offered these white roles,
you don't have to do anything.
And she had to read.
Yeah, like
got it.
Any, I mean, multiple people get offers at any level of their career. I get offers, but they're for like really small parts. People are like, I don't even need you to read. I just want you to play this little role in this web series. Or this pilot.
She was already an Oscar winner by the time that show was cast, right? That's crazy.
And I'm pretty sure it was for that role. We can go back and check. Yeah. We can fact check it. But Em thought she was talking about, when we were listening, I was like, what role was that? Because I assumed it was like a long time ago. Sure. And I think it was for a lead in a TV show. Because that's not something maybe she had done that much.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
Dude, she's just incredible.
Oh, she's
such a powerhouse. I remember seeing her in Doubt when she won Best Supporting Actress opposite Meryl Streep, who I love. I'm just kidding.
One other thing about something Viola Davis has said this year that I thought was amazing was she spoke a little bit regretfully about the movie The Help and having been in The Help. And I felt
it's a problematic film.
It is. Yeah. And I felt very vindicated by that. Not that I have anything to do with the situation, but like from the moment that I walked out of that theater, felt like this movie is weird. And
it like glorified
the
like
noble
glorified
black people that are there to help the white people find their way. Mm-hmm. It felt kind of gross to me. And she finally was like, yeah, that movie didn't turn out how I thought it was going to.
Oh God. And I'm sure that happens to so many people. It's happened to me. It'll happen to me. And, but she also was talking about, she cracked some jokes. Pun intended, about how many she played so many crackheads, like crackhead mothers that, and I think a lot of people try to get away from that. The mother that played the mother in Moonlight actually really wanted to turn the role down because she had done that role so many times. But I think the way it was written and probably the way Barry Jenkins like pitched it, but like she just was like cracking jokes about how like a director would call her and be like, she would be like, yep, I could do that. I don't even need to read the lines. Like I could just walk into the role because she's so like well versed in playing this stereotype.
Yeah. Right.
Which is sad, but
damn. Well, yeah, she's awesome. That's a good,
that's a great float.
But she just, she just like inspired me. I was like, like be who you are and like have your boundaries and be like, I'm not going to fucking read for a role that you're giving to other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. Now, the bees in our bonnets.
Buzz, buzz, bitch.
Okay.
She's
my
a southern bee.
Bitch.
Bitch.
My bee this week is we have lost another friend to the Me Too movement.
Ugh.
We're recording this in midwinter, so this is a particularly tough one because this is a friend that is generally around to warm you up, make you feel better.
Oh, no.
That is the song, Baby, It's Cold Outside, R.I.P.
Can we get a moment of silence?
Pour one out for Baby, It's Cold Outside because...
Oh, they're not playing it anymore?
In this moment of awakening, we have realized that these really obvious date rapey lyrics are indeed pretty fucking date rapey. And so a lot of radio stations have stopped playing the song this year. Now, there was a radio station in Kentucky that was like...
Shocker.
To be Southern again, we aren't taking that down. We love that song. It's been around for 70 years. And they played it nonstop for 24 hours. But, you know, if you listen to the lyrics, I simply must go. The answer is no. Say, what's in this drink? I mean, I don't know.
Who heard those lyrics and was like, yeah, man, that's a banger.
That's a
Let's
hit.
Go.
Well, yeah, in the 40s, in the 40s, that was called flirting. Oh, and now we have a different lens. Anyway, so I'm a little bit bummed, but I understand.
Yeah.
Is it one of your faves?
I mean, it's just it's a feel good. Right?
Pretty soon we're going to find find out Carol of the Bells. My favorite song has some like hidden meaning.
100%.
Is that Bells. Your favorite holiday song?
It is because it sounds right like now. A Hanukkah song.
Yeah, because
yeah, it's
depressing.
It's all minor keys. It's like bum ba ba bum bum ba da bum.
I love
such a good
I love songs in minor keys. I've discovered.
Yep. You guys are dark.
So
Okay. What's your B, bitch?
Okay, so my B this week. I have my period.
Yeah.
I'm bleeding currently.
Mazel tov.
Mazel to me. I'm a woman. tampons are so motherfucking expensive. Why am I paying $7 to put toxic cotton up my vagina hole? Why am I doing that?
Oh my God, I agree so much.
Why? Meanwhile, I can walk in and get a condom for my non-existent dick for fucking $2 next to the poppers in a bodega. What do you mean?
Ew,
and
you're right.
I know. And
did they take the tax off?
No. What?
Oh my God. Isn't that
done?
Was a thing a couple years ago. The pink tax?
The pink tax. It's a thing. We can talk about it another time because I don't have all the information on me like Jessie does with her laptop. But it's really pissing me off this week because I buy a lot of tampons because, you know, I got a heavy flow.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking problem. Like, why is that the case? Like, why do we have to pay so much? And it reminded me of a while ago I watched it was like a little web documentary. And I think it was... Fuck, I want to say Vice, but I don't know. It could have been Bustle.
It sounds like Vice.
Yeah. And basically homeless women were talking about how difficult it is when they're on their periods living on the street. Like the shit that they do, it made me feel so bad because they were like, I have to make the decision where whether do I buy a Pop-Tart today or like pads.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it fucked me up. And it's like
That makes me want to like go out on the street and like put tampons next to.
So I do.
Yeah,
I do that. That's really
I thought you were gonna say it makes you want to go out on the street and free bleed.
And just free bleed all over Times Square.
Too.
I was gonna go to fucking free bleed everywhere. No, when I was a kid, I've always had a soft spot. It makes me feel so bad that I can't help people. And my mom would always say like make a Ziploc baggies and put like mini toothbrushes and like all this good stuff. So then not recently, so a couple years ago, I started putting pads and tampons and I give them to women.
That's such a bad. That's a really good idea.
Yeah. I recommend doing it. It's a feel good thing, but you also know that we need it.
And like, I always carry extra granola bars around so I can give people food if they want it. Sometimes they're like, no, I want to go buy some liquor with this money that you give me. And that's
like,
totally fine too.
Do it up, boo.
Yeah. Whatever you do, you know, I'm not in your position. And so, but it's like funny because you always have an extra tampon on you.
Yes.
I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
So it's like,
so whip it out.
Perfect.
Because that shit is expensive. And I just bought a pack this morning, $7.99. I was very upset.
Ugh. Yeah, I work in an office now that does offer tampons. Like they usually have a box out, and there's a little sign that's like, "Please only use these in case of emergency. Don't let this be your primary."
And
they
just like you're free bleeding.
They just like go away.
And the other day, I was reaching into the box, and this woman walked into the restroom, who I know is the one who's responsible for replenishing them. And I jumped back as if that box buzzed my fingers. And then, like, smoothed down my hair in the mirror like I hadn't been doing that. And she goes, how are we doing on the tamps?
Oh,
I was so busted. I was like, I think we're good.
Oh,
and she came over
God.
And she counted them in front of me.
That is
fucking with me.
She tamp shamed you.
She tamp shamed you. You know what the issue is?
But I deserved it because I overreacted. I acted so fucking guilty.
Yeah, you played yourself.
Yeah,
I now you know how I feel when any woman walks into any bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I feel. I feel like I've like stolen something from the bathroom.
Oh, man.
That's
how,
because they look at me like, what are you doing? And I have to be like, me and my genderqueer friends talk about this because it's just because you're interested in talking about it.
I love this.
It's like, it's the same way I feel because it's like a buzzer's gone off and they're like, what are you doing in here? And I have to look at them and be like, hi, and smile so they know. Because when you smile, I look more feminine. Some people might not, but.
Yeah.
But also that happens to me all the time with like people coming out. They know I'm in the bathroom. And they come out and I'm like, taking a selfie or like fixing my hair too, which is hilarious. So I don't know. Maybe it's more that I'm usually just taking a selfie or something.
Probably you're thirst trapping in the bathroom. They're just like, this isn't a sexy setting
for to do with your identity. Like, it's because you are thirsty.
Okay.
You're doing anything.
Let me explain, by the way, why I keep dragging Julia for the thirst trap thing, because I.
Can I see these?
Saw an article recently.
Just follow me on Instagram.
This article was like, top 10 tips for how to post a perfect thirst trap. And I thought this was such a funny idea for an article that I was like, I wonder what they are. So I clicked on it and I scrolled, and they're like taking people's real life examples and, you know, and all of a sudden I see my good friend Julia Weldon.
Number six. Can I get an amen for Julia in a tub right now with this sultry
Alana's
gaze?
Alana's currently looking at one of my sultry
like
that
you're not explaining
photos.
What's happening right now.
I'm looking. I'm on Instagram. I'm stalking Julia, and this is an image. She's in the bath, no clothes, sultry eyes, wet hair.
The bath is like a place where it's hard to not. Sometimes I snap a good one and I gotta post it, but usually I do a lot of Instagram stories, boomerangs going in and out of the bath. Yes. It's fun,
it is so fun,
And also, that article was auto straddle, and it was a good idea for an article, right?
I love
it,
that.
It was great. Yeah.
Was so funny. You were like, I can't believe I just saw you in this article. I'm a ridiculous human.
It was amazing. I love
I mean,
you.
My child, my childhood acting fucked me up. I take a lot of selfies.
Yeah, whatever. You're also sexy.
I'm
you can
into
pull it,
off. Yeah.
You're hot, Julia. You're hot.
What's the bee in your bonnet, boo-boo?
Okay. Well, you just made me want to share something else, so I'm going to riff on that. But I'm going to start with the one I had planned, which is quick, which we all feel... I'm kind of tired of Mueller not just pouncing on Trump. The news is always terrible, right? The market's going to crash. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to shit.
Everyone's dying.
Things are terrible around the world, and it's really sad. And then here, it's a bee in a bonnet. It's a boat and a bee.
Yes.
Because it's like I keep being like, yes, 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 more bad news. And I'm just like, come on, like you got enough. Yeah. Like, I don't understand. I know he's like, and my partner's a lawyer, and she's like, he's doing a very good job prosecuting. He's basically circling him. He's indicting everyone around him. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's kind of fucking genius, but I'm also like, but when? Like, can we just do something?
Yeah.
Right. So this reminds me a lot of your recent bee, which was having to take the high road when you just want to be petty. And we talked about how it's a long game.
Yeah.
And that's what Mueller's doing.
That
right?
is it. Yeah.
He has to take his time,
high road.
Take the high road.
Long game.
Don't get
all
in the
way.
Gutter too soon, because then you overplay your hand.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I have a really good one related to yours, though, and then
tell
we
me.
Can move on. So you talking about feminine hygiene and all this shit. So full disclosure, I haven't been to the gyno, so I just went to the gyno. And I haven't been in a while because I'm genderqueer and it's an unsafe space probably. And also in the past, I didn't realize how long it had been. And everything's fine. But like
Disclaimer, everything's fine, guys. We're fine.
But the reason I'm talking about it is because I've had top surgery since the last time I went, which is probably why my brain and like had a crazy medical thing happen. And I was probably like, you know what? I'm focusing on other things. Everything's fine down there. Great.
Yeah.
But like it made me like I don't usually identify like the gyno can suck in general, but like I don't normally identify as dysphoric. Mm. But in those spaces, it can feel like very like, oh, yeah, I'm not a woman.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I'm not a woman. And I just don't necessarily identify that way. And I float in different spaces, but this woman, this fucking doctor asked me if I was, she was like, so, they're just so badly trained. The form didn't even have how do you identify on the form. Oh. And it's a major, awesome practice. They have like eight, it's all women doctors, great. But this particular doctor, like some of them are better than the others. She asked me, so are you going to have a sex change? And I'm like, that's just like not the question. She was asking about my top surgery. Well, I was telling her, you know, so I had top surgery, blah, blah, blah. And then she asked just now, so are you going to have a sex change? And like, I get there's just a better way to say that.
Yeah.
She moved on to the right questions. Do you plan on taking hormones? Like,
right.
But it's funny because
I actually haven't heard that phrase in a long time.
Exactly. It's an outdated phrase. And it's like, I wanted to say back to her. It's so funny. My first instinct was, I'm like in this awkward robe.
Ugh.
I'll show you guys a photo afterwards.
Yes, please.
I'm in this robe, which is already awkward because I have no, I call them my non-tits. I have no tits. So it's like, I have no chest. So I'm like using the robe, trying to cover up my top surgery. Because like,
you know, it was an open in the front situation.
Yeah, open in the front. And then And then I had to just, she just asked the wrong questions. And I was just like, God. I wanted to just say back, you need a training.
Yeah.
That was the wrong way
it needs to be, we're in 2018.
She didn't even ask me
guys,
how I identify.
Like, what the fuck?
I had to say back, so I identify as trans and non-binary, mostly non-binary, but yeah, like, that's just not, you ask, how do you identify?
Yeah. Across the board, practices need to be implementing these kind of training. Yeah. It's fucking
2018. The nurse was pretty good. She said, do you feel comfortable taking, like, usually we have people take all their clothes off. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. But, like, she was very tactful about, like, you might not, I told her, oh, I had top surgery, so I don't need a breast exam.
Right.
So it's just, and then I got one anyway, I think.
I think she says.
See, like, she could have asked me, do you want one?
Sure. Yeah.
I was going to ask because it is really uncomfortable when I go to the gyno and there's like, there's no real, like, you know, you're in a doctor setting, you know that they're going to be touching you, but like nobody asks, can I open your robe now and like touch your breasts, right? They just kind of do
it.
So
totally.
Is that something that you were prepped with before? Like,
she wasn't good, but I'm also a highly, for all of my like, it takes me a lot to get upset, and I'm actually really comfortable in a lot of settings. And so it's like funny because I just always, and because I'm who I am, I want to make everyone else comfortable.
Totally. Right.
So I ended up just dealing with it. And then I leave and I'm like, that was fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm sure you still register it, but not in the moment.
Totally.
It's when you're done people pleasing and you walk out and then you're like, oh, but I feel shitty.
Yeah.
I can feel that
vulnerable
I feel shitty.
Yeah.
Base.
And a lot of, and think about people who are trans and gender non-binary
100%.
And totally uncomfortable, 100%. Totally dysphoric. That's why they don't go to the fucking doctor.
Exactly.
I mean, and some people might say, well, go to a different doctor. That's fine. I could go to Cal and Lord, but they have a huge weight and I also want to be able to go where I want to go
100%
and not have to worry about it. Yeah. And it's just like basic fucking training.
Just train your medical stuff.
Just to be sensitive. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
All practitioners should be trained in that shit. It's basic. It's fucking queer 101.
Exactly.
Yeah. How do you identify?
Right.
Done.
Yeah. I know. It's Julia. Interesting. So I remember the first time I went to the gynecologist once I'd started dating women and I was very nervous about the questionnaire. Mm. And then they actually had something that was pretty inclusive on there. So I was like, okay, that's like one thing. I don't have to worry about fucking up. And then I went into the office and the conversation was the same about like, are you being
safe?
Are you using condoms?
Yeah.
Yep.
Are you using birth control? Yep.
And then it was like, Jesus Christ, I don't know how to have this. How do I teach you about what do I say? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be weirded out? Mm-hmm. It's a lot. When
it's
really you just need to focus on your health.
Yeah. Check my vagina, make sure I'm good and bye.
And also, don't make assumptions.
Yes.
Just say.
That's it.
Do you mind sharing like information about your sexual partners?
Exactly.
Or like, do you, you know, like, I don't know, anything. There's ways to do it. There's just better ways to do it.
100%.
I hear
just
you.
To start at zero. Just
start at zero.
And let your patient tell you, which I think is probably a medical principle anyway, right?
Yeah.
So.
Don't fucking assume. Don't say dumb shit.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Good job, guys.
Thanks.
Excellent.
That was a good beat, right?
I like that beat. I want to start introducing the button segment that Julia's now introduced.
Just something you feel neutral about.
It's like the neutral.
It's actually here's my button, ma'am.
It's a riveting segment. Yeah. It's something you feel meh about. Does everyone else feel meh? Okay, let's move on.
You know what I feel mad about? The subways right now.
Right. Okay, guys. We will be right back to dig into gender and acting and music and parenthood, maybe? I don't know. A lot of things with Julia Weldon.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So, Julia, because, like I said, I have not dug into your acting career with you. I had not, well, I should have as your friend, but I had not had a professional reason.
How dare you?
To watch your first big screen and screen debut, which was Before and After.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe some of you listening are like me and thought you've seen every Meryl Streep movie ever made. But there might be a chance that you did not see this one, like myself, to find out that your friend Julia Weldon starred in a movie with Meryl Streep and you don't know what that movie is very disconcerting. But let me tell you, this movie came out in 1996, starring Julia Weldon, Meryl Streep, Liam Neeson, and Edward Furlong. And so this is like the height of everyone's careers, except for Julia's. But everyone else is like really peaking here. I mean, not to say Meryl Streep has peaked or Liam Neeson, but like, wow, we were really into them in this moment in time, you know? And
Death,
also,
Death Becomes Her had just come out.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
She was
riding high.
Yeah, I think it was between that and River Runs Through. Or not River Runs.
Oh, sorry.
No,
River
Wild.
With Kevin Bacon. So I'm 2 degrees.
Right.
We talked about this.
Yeah. Edward Furlong was like hottie McHot little teenage boy.
Oh, yeah. Girls were chasing him around parking lots.
Right.
What? He was very popular.
And then enter little dykey Julia Weldon. And so, okay.
Eating chips.
Hang on. Okay. So the basic plot of this movie is that you guys are a family. You're living in rural Massachusetts. So your brother, played by Edward Furlong, is accused of murdering his girlfriend. And your parents are frantically trying to figure out what happened and how to protect him while they're figuring out what happened. The police are after him. It's a big mystery and it's pulling the family apart. And you are little sister Judith, who everyone, interestingly enough, calls Jude. This very gender neutral nickname.
This is cracking.
And you're the moral conscience of the film that's constantly calling out the adults for fucking everything up.
Accurate. Very
There's
accurate.
A scene in which Meryl Streep is in the bathtub.
That was my audition scene.
Ooh. Was it?
Mm-hmm.
You are hovering over her bath and reaming her out. Like taking Meryl to task for how poorly she's handling the situation.
Is that what you're going to do? You're just going to, what is it? Those are my audition scenes.
No, keep going. Those,
I can't say I memorized your lines, but it's burned in my brain.
There are some pretty funny lines, too.
How old are
just
you when you film
this? Just
because
that's what people do? Just because they might get away with it?
Right.
Yeah.
You also narrate the movie.
Let me raise my register. Just because that's what people do? Just because they might get it? Was that better?
You're so baby-faced
you
and beautiful
so
in it.
You are so fucking cute.
So, wait, how old were you when you filmed it? You were like 12, 13?
I was 11.
11? Okay.
I have a story about my 12th birthday that you'll probably enjoy.
Okay, yeah, well, I want to hear that. But yeah. Okay, but first of all, though, let's just address. So your fashion in it is so lesbian. Yes. You are either in baggy flannels or you are wearing like mustard-colored turtlenecks with cardigans over them.
Yeah.
The hair is sometimes down, sometimes in a loose pony.
The hair is mostly just flowing
It's really
down.
Iconic. There's one moment where you pop into a scene and you're wearing just straight up men's pajamas, like sized for a man.
Oh yeah, huge, right?
So I don't know, did like the costume department just really read your soul, or did you
the
have some
costume
input?
Department? Oh. No, they just read my soul. I think. I mean, let's be real. I was pretty gay even back then. They met me. They were like, okay, definitely a tomboy, maybe a dyke in the future, maybe a boy in the future. We'll put you in man's clothes. Yeah, I'm just kidding. But Anne Roth is actually really. Really famous and like this
the costume
outfits,
designer
head of the costume department she's won like multiple Academy Awards and everyone's outfits are weird. Meryl Streep has like weird frocks that are buttoned at the top.
Yeah, but it was the 90s, so like adult fashion was just fucking
okay, fine,
awful,
sorry, we
general.
Can focus on my lesbian
she only
fashion
cares about your lesbian ass fashion.
I mean, the force was strong with the flannels in that movie.
Yeah.
And I think that they did. I think that they do that. Like when they meet, you know. But, you know, Scarlett Johansson was in a movie at that time with the long blonde hair called Manny and Lowe. And I feel like we should look at the fashion in that. Because, like, maybe it was just like little girl,
the fashion.
Child stars.
Okay, I'm sure I'm projecting.
I don't know.
It was also fascinating.
You're not projecting. Everyone notices the flannels. It's like, oh my God, you look like a lesbian.
Yeah.
Oh no, it was definitely lesbianiacal.
100%.
I am agreeing with you.
Agreed.
Also, it's so interesting because Edward Furlong, you know, was such a heartthrob then and is wearing his,
like, also looks like a lesbian.
Right.
Right.
Well, not just looks like a lesbian, but looks like you now. So when I when I'm watching Edward Furlong in that movie in his like white tees and like cool jackets.
Oh my God, you're right.
And what? I was thinking about what he represented in that moment, and I was like, you know, I've seen young women look at Julia Weldon the way that young women were looking at Edward Furlong back then. Like I've seen you play music in your white tees and have your fangirls up front drooling
you
over you,
roll
and
that
I'm like,
sleeve,
all right, I'm rolling my sleeves.
Like little sis was working gonna the become team. The next yes. Edward Furlong.
Oh my God,
you are the you're, next Edward.
Nobody
you're,
knew.
You know
but
what? I'm just gonna agree with you. I'm just gonna.
You're gonna be riding it. High
yeah.
after this.
I'm not
it,
gonna
baby.
Lie. I know. I had like dinner. I had drinks with my agent's assistant recently, and she was like, "We're like picturing you like a kind of like a lesbian James Dean," and I was like, "What the fuck? Like,
hello?
Okay, night." Year, night, month, year, made. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Well,
like the
I think
fact
you should be like, you mean Edward Furlong and before and after.
Also, you're so right. I've never made that connection that that's how I dress.
Yeah.
He's got the leather jackets.
Yep.
A little too skinny, but.
Right. Yeah.
You're just hot and you don't even know.
Might have been on drugs then. No.
Yeah. No. You're a healthier Edward Furlong from before and after.
Exactly.
Okay. Like so, what is the takeaway from your experience on this movie? That is just so fucking nuts. Yeah. And
nuts.
What was your 12th birthday like? Give us the goss.
Oh my God. It was insane. It was just a wild, wild ride.
Do you have specific memories of like working with Meryl?
Yeah. So many. Like it was a very formative experience, uh-huh. obviously. But you might, I don't know, some part of me thinks that I have a really weird memory. Like I can remember a lot. I think it's because of my child acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe because of these like really intense experiences when I was a kid. Like I remember other shit, but do I remember that experience? Like, vividly, yeah. And also I was having to memorize like so my photographic memory is actually my visual memory is very strong.
Okay.
So anyway, the point is that, and I think it's actually coming back to me the more that I'm acting now, which is kind of interesting. It's like I'm tapping into like what I used to know. And I'm trying to get in touch with those like natural instincts I had as a kid, because like that's what we're all trying to get back to as actors. Mm-hmm. I think that vulnerable, like imaginative side.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but I mean, yeah, I don't know. It was insane. I showed up, we had some rehearsals, and then they literally built the entire interior set inside of a hockey rink.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So my mom was given like a car and a per diem, and then I had
Where?
A guardian. Oh, sorry. It was shot in the Berkshires.
Oh, it was. Okay.
And it was
a woman
it was
director,
gorgeous.
Right?
No.
Oh.
It was a French male director
wrong.
Named
oh.
Barbe Schroeder.
Did he look like a lesbian? Is that why?
No, I just went by the name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Barbette.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Barbette.
Oh.
I no. do think this movie kind of holds up to the female gaze because Meryl's character is
oh,
kind
yeah.
of proven to be right. She has the right instinct all along, and mm-hmm. then it turns out to be the right one,
mm-hmm.
even though she's being looked
and
at
the
as like
the
emotional
right.
woman who's freaking out and
yeah,
is being like overly precious of her son, but she's really the only one who's thinking clearly. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. her and Jude. Of
it's
course.
Based on a
Jude.
Book written by a woman, and
okay.
there's a lot
there
more
go.
Crap that goes down in the book. That okay, so this is a script that was adapted by the guy who fucking won an Academy Award for Silence of the Lambs,
ooh.
Ted Talley.
Okay,
Ted Talley and Barbe Schroeder. I'll never forget at the reading. Ted Talley chain smoked the whole time when you could still smoke inside. It was at the Carlisle Hotel.
Uh-huh.
Everything was at like the fanciest places. Duh. It was a Disney movie.
Hell.
I mean, me and my family were thrust into like crazy fancy movie world.
Right.
And also, since I was an unknown, I had to audition multiple times. Mm-hmm. I had like 3 or 4 callbacks before they committed to me because I was completely unknown.
Oh my God.
I'll never forget. So, I mean, do you want to hear about the audition process? Do you want to hear about the making of it?
Well, first of all,
Meryl
people...
immediately hugged me though.
Did
at,
she?
At like literally the point of the reading story is that there was a reading to kind of my mom thinks it was to make sure Meryl approved of me. And she
Probably.
Like hugged me immediately. We sat next to each other the whole reading. She's like, she's just incredible.
You posted something on Instagram yesterday because I told you I was watching the movie and then you went on a little spree on Instagram sharing some choice screenshots from the film. And you said something about like Meryl taught me how to flare my nostrils like this. And I honestly was like, did Meryl teach them
I knew
how to
you
flare
would,
their
I knew
nostrils?
You would think that.
Well, because that's something Meryl would do, okay?
You Meryl. Because you know Meryl.
She's into her choice. Her choices are very specific, and I feel like she would be aware
totally.
Of that.
I wouldn't be surprised if I picked up on a lot of her mannerisms because I was a chameleon. I used to be more of a chameleon. I think, again, I'm getting back to that. Like But when I was a kid especially, I would pick up on people's like mannerisms really quickly. And she, one thing she did do for one of the more intense scenes is I was feeling nervous about it. So my mom probably told me to, I don't know, I had a guardian for half the time because my mom was a social worker. So she got me adjusted up there. Mm-hmm. They put me up in a fancy hotel for like, with two huge rooms for like 2 months. Hmm. I had a tutor. Wow. My mom went back to work and I had a guardian named Desiree. And, so this the one day I had this very emotional scene. So you guys know. So it's the one where she's like, Jude, what happened? And I'm sitting at the, and I'm like, don't want to tell. And I'm like, Dad and Jacob had a big fight this morning. Mm-hmm. She's like, what the fuck? Tell me about it. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know something. And then I was worried because I had to cry. So my mom was like, why don't you ask her to like come help you? And she came to my trailer. She had like this huge thing and I had like a little honey wagon and she came to my trailer and she helped me by having me do it really fast and like just doing it really fast. She just got me to like internalize the lines a little more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was like amazing. I mean, she was incredible. Her and the director had struggles. So it's funny that you actually talk about, so her and Liam Neeson were obviously, they were huge.
Yeah.
And they were the stars. And they
struggled with. And in the first scene of the movie, Liam Neeson feeds Julia a potato chip.
Yes.
And not to make that sound sensual, but it was just special.
I actually took a photo of it on my phone and texted it to Jesse.
Fuck, yes. I had to learn that piano song, and then we went up there, and that was one of my first days of shooting. And he's just, like, the most charming human in the world. And they both were just, like, such surrogate parents. But, yeah, do I think about that potato chip sometimes and how it tasted?
Fuck, yeah. And how you were playing piano while he fed it to you?
I mean, it was very, was sensual, let's be real.
You've always been a very multi-hyphenate performer. Piano player, potato chip eater.
I should incorporate that into my live show.
You should. Anyway.
So she was incredible.
Yeah. I guess my big question
is, wild.
I like after you came out of that, did you feel like a fully formed performer?
I mean, it's funny that you asked that because I always crack jokes about like, so then I just had a meeting with CBS Primetime, like just their general casting, which is a really cool step for me to be just taking like my agent's setting me up with meetings so that they think of me for pilot season.
Right.
Even though I'm not really sure what they actually cast. Like, I think pilots and whatever. And I made a joke, like, so then I did this, you know, this film with Meryl Streep and Liam Neeson. And then I played their daughter. And then I retired because I had worked with Meryl Streep. I mean, like, I sometimes joke, like, how do you go? What do you do from there?
Right.
And I acted. I did an off-Broadway play. I did Law and Order. And then I went to college, and then I was like, I'm going to be a real kid for a minute.
Yeah.
And I pierced my eyebrow, and I bleached my hair blonde, and my agent was really angry at me. And then she didn't call me for 4 years.
Oh,
and I was with the wrong agent back then. And then I got cast out of nowhere in SVU. They called me down from Vassar my senior year, and then I was like, I just made $6,000 on a guest star of an episode.
Fuck
maybe I'll try acting and not pursue a philosophy degree anymore.
Interesting.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways the industry always kind of kicks me in the ass in a good way, and I'm like, I should be doing this.
Yeah.
And I just actually wrote all my cards to my agents, and I literally said like, I feel like both music and acting are my calling, but it's hard to get away from the acting because it does keep like coming back at me. And every time I think, no, the industry is not inclusive enough. No, I don't want to struggle to get an agent again. I'm at like the happiest point in my career. And honestly, that probably has to do with the fact that the industry is changing. It's not that I didn't want to be doing it all along.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, great. I mean, doing that film was incredible, but it was huge. It was a huge deal to do that. The second project I did. I did a really small gay, actually, film when I was 10. An indie film that was about a relationship between a black and a white guy. And I was like 10 and looked really gay in that too. I'll show you photos.
You were playing a gay character?
No. I played the little sad sister again. It was like really intense drama.
You were typecast.
Yeah. I got typecast early.
Right.
And now I'm like doing like I'm very like hip genderqueer roles, but I really like drama. Like, yeah. I think it's my first thing.
So tell us about this. Now that you, just to add a little bit to that summary of what's happened since that movie, you also have had a very lovely music career. Yeah. You have albums out. You have a kick-ass music video for your single When You Die that came out in 2018. and now you're really rededicating yourself to seriously pursuing the acting more than you have in a long time.
Yeah.
And so I'm very curious to know what that landscape looks like in terms of your gender identity and what you're finding out there.
Yeah, so it's really funny because I always thought that music would be the place that I would be able to explore my gender more.
Right.
And I don't want to be one of those. It's like we always make up these things and then it's hard to go back on them. Mm-hmm. And I think that for a long time. So what happened was, I picked up the guitar when I was in the height of my acting when I was a kid. So mm-hmm. I picked up the guitar when I was 12 or 13. And I think that, like, I liked it. And I also painted. Like, I think I'm one of those people that is very ADHD and likes to, like, dive into a ton of stuff. And like, the creative impulse is just, like, in there. Mm-hmm. And it's got to come out. And to be honest, in my adult life, I really need to, it's nice to like hear myself say that because I think we all just like, especially in New York, life is so fucking busy and it's so easy to get wrapped up in it. But I think it's in there. So whenever I wasn't acting and auditioning when I was a kid, I needed to like just be emoting. And especially in high school when I was dramatic and coming out and mm-hmm. really intense stuff. And so I started writing songs when I was really young, like 14, 15. I was really always writing them in my head. But then the acting really informed my storytelling and like embodying this character and like encapsulating it. And then in college, it really took over. So I started really seriously songwriting in high school and college. And then the acting thing really failed for me when I tried to get back to it after I was cast in this kind of a big guest star role in SVU. It's called like it's the SVU episode Ripped, if you want to check it out. It's on like season 7, I think. So I came back to it and I bombed. Like I really, really feel comfortable saying that in this safe space. Like
your performance felt bad to you. Is that what that means?
No, not my performance. Like the industry was really terrible for gay. Like I thought, oh, it's going to be a great time for gay and trans roles. It was the opposite. It was like a horrible time. Like this is 2006 and the industry was just not ready and there were no roles for me. So I was trying to do it at a time when there were literally no fucking roles. So I was also going out for things that were maybe you could do it. I was wearing things I didn't feel comfortable in. I was growing my hair out because my agent was terrible and told me to change my appearance.
Fuck that. To be more femme?
Yes. And I was like, I'll do whatever because that's how they... I came back in the industry when I was not a child anymore and I felt indebted to it. You feel... And, you know, it's really just it can be really rough and I just really feel for, like, actors that are trying to do it and, like, friends of mine that are like, I just want that audition. And I'm like, I want to just be going out as much as you are. And I'm like, I totally understand. And like, I've been there and it's not easy. Mm-hmm. So that was 15 years ago.
Holy shit. Was the role for SVU a queer role?
So that was like, my mom always says, I think that they wanted you because you were like, there was no way that this sexual, like it was an episode of about my best friend assaulting me. And it was like a non-sexualized role. So they needed a victim who wouldn't have been appealing to this character that assaults them. And so it was like a desexualized role, I would say. And also, I look really weird in it, but I feel really proud of the scene. It's on my reel, so like we can watch it. But I feel really proud of the interrogation scene. But otherwise, I was like really out of practice. Also, Mariska, I always mix up her name, Mariska. Yeah. She fucking directed me. Talking about the female gaze, she directs that show.
Really?
Like,
that's cool.
People are obsessed with her and they should be. I didn't like, it wasn't like Meryl Streep, but I'm just kidding. The guy couldn't get me to get a performance out.
Oh, wow.
Like the guy director.
She's probably had more experience than he has.
Oh my God. And she has been on the show for so many years.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to work with her because she was like, this is what you're going to do. And she just directed the scene for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she got a good performance out of me.
Wow.
So I did that. And then I just gave up. I said, I don't want to throw myself in a place where I'm getting nowhere and like I'm not getting anything back. And I found out years later, it's because also my agent was, I was with a huge agency. I was a small fish in a big pond and my agent was not even there. She was there one day a week. So, like, she was just not investing in me because there was nothing for her to invest in, maybe. And that's, like, you know, it was just, I really think it was a perfect storm for me to be like, I fucking can't.
Yeah.
And then I would get roles every once in a while through referrals from the queer community because it's very, back then, it was hard to find people. And the past, even now, it's hard to find people that have training in acting or experience and are also queer and genderqueer because there's been no industry for us. So then I had like a lot of partners be like, why are you not pursuing songwriting? Your songs are really good. Mm-hmm. You clearly love it. And then I started going hard with that when I was like 25. Like I just started with a couple dinky shows on Bleecker Street and I had like 50 people come out and it was like, whoa, okay. Yeah. So I had like a big friend fan base and then it just grew from there. And my music career has just been I like feel so tender about it and I'm in like a really vulnerable place about it right now. And then I'll shut up. But
it's the sensitive artist.
Sensitive artist.
You're always vulnerable about something.
I am vulnerable.
Why are you so vulnerable?
I'm not. Do you want to guess again? Spring.
Spring.
I know nothing
about. Are you an Aries?
I'm a Taurus, but I'm very close. Like I'm Aries Taurus cusp.
I love that.
That was a good guess.
Thanks. I'm really good at my horoscopes.
What are you?
Pisces.
Ooh.
Okay. I'm interrupting this impromptu segment.
So basically, long story short, my music is like really near and dear to me. And I'm actually going through like, I think a really healthy, because I'm about to have a kid,
yay,
I'm going through a really healthy like stepping back with it to be like, what do I want to do? How do I make it happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They say babies do that.
Yeah.
They shape your priorities for you or remind you
totally
what they are.
And I'm like, the acting's going well. I really feel like it's important to follow a vibe and like a wave. And we can talk more about what's happening with that. But it's like the music industry is turning out to feel like it's letting me down more in terms of gender stuff, because I genuinely feel like if I was a cis dude, I would have a market. And I have tried so hard to be like, I think people don't know what to do with me or where to put me. Mm-hmm. And that feels really disappointing. Yeah. And I feel really sad.
When you say people, who are you referring to exactly?
Booking agents, like managers, Spotify maybe. I mean, Spotify just says like, oh, you're queer. Great. Like I get on people's queer lists. Right. Which is fine. Right. I don't
care. That's the blessing and the curse.
Totally.
Right?
And I don't care at all being marketed that way. But I think that we're hitting a time in the industry where something is happening. Like Julian Baker is incredible. But people don't see her as queer. They don't need to, and that's and I've always been like, I want to do that. I want to transcend like those. Yeah. I don't need to be put in that box. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I don't mind being put there.
You want all the boxes.
I want all the boxes.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I think I'm like, people feel so supportive. Like I have such a big, I do have a fan base and that's really amazing. And Spotify has done, like people have been exposed to my music all over the world. And so I'm just like, that's amazing. How do I reconcile like my feelings about the industry with like how hard it's been for me to attain certain goals for myself?
Yeah. So why does the acting field look more promising to you now in terms of gender?
So I got like this small part on High Maintenance.
Woo,
and
baby.
I fucking love that show. They're just like,
that was
changing.
A cool episode.
That's such a cool episode,
That's
right?
That's episode where we meet the guy's ex-wife.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who want to know which episode it was. That one.
It's called Scrumple. Kate Scheel is in it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people know her too. And then so.
And you are somebody in that church.
It's like an all-inclusive queer Brooklyn church.
By. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that happened. And then I like got cast in a little pilot and I just like started, that's like going to turn into a short film now, which is happening a lot. And then so people started like throwing me random stuff. Oh, but then I also randomly went to SAG and did this open door program and got myself an agent. And it wasn't like an incredible agent, but he was really sweet. It was like a booster for like, okay, should I be doing this again? And it's so much about access in this industry, whatever level you're at. You know, like it doesn't matter if you're just, you know, on casting networks, submitting yourself, have a decent agent that you freelance with, have a huge agent. I'm in a boutique level. Like I think it's a great, I'm not in a huge agency. They would maybe forget about me. So, I mean, how could they forget me? But so the point is that I met with them literally a year ago and then literally like to the day. And And then I met with them again in the new year for a second meeting with all the agents, and they just fucking get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm hitting the industry, like CBS was really affirming in my meeting with them. They were like the head of casting was like, it's a really good time for you.
So are That's you awesome. Looking for specifically genderqueer or trans roles or?
Not at all, but like
you're open.
Yeah, and I told them in that meeting, actually, I run the gamut from like punk chick drummer. Like mm-hmm. I feel very happy about the ways that I can be like mm-hmm. play a wide variety of genders and roles. Mm-hmm. I mean, not wide, but like everything from like a lesbian woman mm-hmm. or like a punk chick rocker chick to trans boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting hearing you say that because it's similar to the way that you describe how you identify yourself. Mm-hmm. Earlier you said I can be they, them, or he, or mm-hmm. sorry, her, she.
Well, I can do that, but I can do
you
that
can be
too.
He too. Yeah, like, and exactly. I love when people, you keep it open.
Well, the funny thing is that I haven't like not toyed with the idea of transitioning, but I feel really like I'm very dependent on feedback, and so like I'm getting a lot of positive feedback for mm-hmm. my gender right now, and that's based on my child acting. Like I got a lot of feedback when I was younger, and I rely on it, mm-hmm. and I'm learning to like understand myself as like a worthy person without that feedback. Yeah. But it's an interesting industry to be in because as an adult, there's a lot of rejection, but even with the callbacks I'm getting and the positive feedback I'm getting from my agents and just like casting people. Mm-hmm. In the room, it's really promising and it feels really good. And I'm not closed off to transitioning eventually, but right now I would be really limited if I was just transitioning and had facial hair and mm-hmm. looked like and appeared like a trans man mm-hmm. and a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I wouldn't be competing with cis males.
Right.
So it is. It's really nice to be like, yeah, I had top surgery. I feel like a whole new person. Yeah. And I feel really confident in the room. And I think that's why I'm able to come back to acting. My chest like hindered me from doing so many things, being mm-hmm. healthy, being happy, and doing my professional life the way I want to and I can. And so, and then I was going to say one more thing. But yeah, my agency sends me out. The cool thing is that they have a lot to send me out for. I'm their go-to you know, born as a female, gender non-binary person, mm-hmm. and they have other trans people, I'm sure, that they represent, but I don't think
you're their number one.
I think I'm their person for this
MVP.
Look,
yeah.
And then there are so many roles in the industry for people like
yes.
me, and it's crazy to come back at a time where there's actually shit to audition for. It's,
yeah,
you've heard. I tell you about all my auditions.
Yeah, I get a little text. Mostly like, hey, dude, sorry I haven't texted you back in a while. I've been on so many auditions. And I'm like, fucking
I'm so busy.
Damn it.
I'm so busy. That's fucking awesome, though.
And then I just signed with them commercially and for voiceover. And so voiceover is fun because it's a whole new world. I'm like, ooh, what is this about? But commercials, I'm really curious to see if the commercial world is ready for this.
Yeah.
They better be.
You know, so Alana and I have spent some time in the show talking about pronouns and they, them, mm-hmm. because it's just endlessly fascinating as something to explore as human mm-hmm. beings. But, you know, we're always having this conversation as two cis chicks. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. this place that we keep getting to in our conversation is something that I'd love to pick your brain about for a second, mm-hmm. which is if the they, them, non-binary identity feels like its own identity to people. And I'm not asking you to speak on behalf of everybody, but just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it just feels like an other, but it doesn't mean anything inherently. You know what I mean? Like, does it feel like a third gender? Or is it just a
the other.
Not this or that, mm-hmm. but a million other mm-hmm. things?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, that's a hard one.
Because when you say, like, I could maybe see myself transitioning eventually, that makes me think that non-binary in and of itself does not feel to you like a gender.
Hmm.
Like that is something that I
well are you
that
saying
is
it gender neutral or is it non-binary?
Yeah, well it's like what does gender neutral mean? It doesn't have its own characteristics per se, right? It just means not what we typically ascribe to male or female.
The only thing I'm like resistant to is using the word other because like mm-hmm. the other just has like so many connotations.
Yep.
Right.
And I'm not good at that shit. It's like a full, but philosophically speaking, like other to whiteness or other to to the male and female.
And this is why I think we should get rid of all gender pronouns, because we only have named two. And so anything that's not one of those two is another.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm she and Alana is she, but we experience ourselves and our bodies very differently from each mm-hmm. other. So mm-hmm. it's all kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of teachers are starting, like I have some teacher friends that are just using they as much as possible.
Right.
To your point, because it's like you don't want to assume anyone's gender. Right. And, but I mean, in terms of my own, yeah, it's hard to speak other than that.
Sure. Like,
pun intended, other than that. But like, I think that for me, it's like a third gender more mm-hmm. than, more than other to male and female. It's like, yeah, it's like it can represent just this mm-hmm. a new thing, right?
So if you
and I don't feel gender neutral. I feel mm-hmm. like I'm, that's why non-binary fits me mm-hmm. so well to me. It feels like better than gender or gender non-conforming.
Right, because you don't feel neutral. You are a real person with specific thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
And
I once had this person I was like into in college. I was probably doing something bad with her. maybe cheating on my girlfriend. She was so hot and she was so French. She told me that, I remember it was Halloween, and she told me we were like this crazy Vassar party, and she told me that she feels like I'm the extremes of both.
Genders,
that's a really nice compliment. I think.
I know. I was like, let's make out. I'm obsessed with you.
I have a question.
That could also
forgive.
Be a big insult. She clearly didn't mean it that way. But no, I think I feel like someone, if they said that to me, they'd be insulting me.
I would think that was a compliment. If
like,
someone
oh, you
that
mean I'm
me.
A bitch and an asshole?
Well, that you're assuming though.
Yeah,
that,
that's a negative.
That,
spin.
That's a negative assumption, and you're assuming some.
I think
shitty
she
shit.
Was saying that I'm very masculine in some ways, and I'm also really. But I'm really sensitive, probably, which I've gotten.
I have a question, and again, forgive my ignorance, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
If, say, you were to transition fully into becoming a man,
mm-hmm.
would you still want to be referred to as non-binary using those pronouns, or would you want to then be referred to as he?
So here's like a really interesting thing. So a lot of people I know that are gender in my community that are like gender non-binary or non-conforming have transitioned because they're tired of being identified incorrectly. And I am mostly mistaken for just like a ma'am, a lady, a woman. We've been out before and I get ladied all the time. And it's not that that's the worst thing in the world, but like even my family, like I've had to like, it's been really hard. They just, my mom is always like, girls, ladies. And I tell her, it's almost like when you tell someone, can you not do that? And she like has trouble because she's like, I'm not supposed to do something. And she's like, just not thinking.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I transitioned, yeah, I would definitely embrace my like, my, I feel like a dude.
Yeah.
Like, and then And then I think I picture myself being like one of those kind of like old, and I also identify as like a dyke.
Yeah.
Like I think it's like kind of fun to be like, it's also about like things evolving. And like, since my gender has changed, my sexuality has changed. And like, I've been able to embrace sides of myself that I didn't even know. And I think that, I mean, I came out when I was like 13. So like, it took me a long time to get to this point. And I always joke that it might take me like, it took me like 10 years to admit that I needed to have top surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard, I think, because I come from a generation that's like a little older, and we are not, it wasn't a possibility when we were younger. And now kids that are like all the like trans kids that are running around, they have so much more access, even if it's still expensive and not always covered.
Mm-hmm.
They see it everywhere online. I was just like, crying listening to Ani DiFranco being like, I'm bisexual, like that's the only word I had.
Totally.
So I picture myself being maybe one of those like old dyke dudes that like transitions when I'm like 50.
Fuck yeah.
That's not that far away.
You know, it reminds me of when Alana and I saw Eileen Miles speak.
I was just thinking that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The poet and who has traditionally identified as a lesbian woman and now has been dabbling with they them and was saying that they generally don't mind if people use whatever pronouns they want. They enjoy they them. But she her is okay. And but the thing that really bothers Eileen Miles. Mm. The only thing that really gets them worked up is if they go to a restaurant and the server says, what can I get you ladies?
Oh, yeah. It's like one of my biggest pet peeves. Every time I'm like, I'll have the fucking old fashioned.
But that's like, what's interesting
to me.
Like,
hey.
It's interesting to me that, she doesn't push that button and then ladies pushes
so,
it
really
hard.
You know what's
really
funny? If I really admit it, it does.
It does.
It does push
pushes your button.
It does. Yeah. But it's not because, have I talked to you about this? That I have had some queer people challenge me on it and I'm like, slow your roll. Mm-hmm. We all have our reasons, but I didn't know this until a friend kind of grilled me like, hey, because I had all these articles being written about my music videos and my new album coming out. So I got like really good press. And my friend who's queer and super affirming was like, you know, I noticed that like a lot of those articles are misgendering you. Like, how do you feel about that? And I realized, and I was like, well,
misgendering you with she, her.
Yeah. And I use both. And I said that back. But then I realized the reason that I use both is because it's more painful to have to constantly feel misgendered than to be, for me, this is just who I am. Most people are like, no, use my right pronouns. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I would rather be a malleable, flexible human being so that I don't get angry all the time. And
okay.
I have to correct people all the time.
Yeah.
Can I offer a counter point of view on that?
Go for it.
I, as a cis person and a friend of yours, I feel like, God, I hear my language in my head before it's coming out of my mouth and I'm wincing, but
it's okay.
Because it's not about my experience, but it would be almost more helpful for me if you were clear about I prefer they, them.
But you, they, them, me all the time.
Sure. Okay. So me as a cis friend, not necessarily me specifically, but I just feel like it's really helpful if someone is specific to me about what they prefer.
Well, that's fine.
And then if I fucked it up, that could be your choice to not correct me if you're worried about having to police people all the time. But it's almost easier if someone is specific than if it's like, you can use whatever you want.
But do I do that at a restaurant?
What do I do?
Do I do that at every restaurant I go to? So I agree with you. So I think the interesting what we're talking about is that I think that this is something I used to not get either, like at all. But I use different pronouns in different spaces. So like my partner and all her friends use they, them.
Yeah.
Because they're like well versed in it.
Yes.
You are well versed in it. From now on, I'm glad we had this chat. Over the podcast, you should use they, them because you're good at it. And you're someone I feel comfortable making that ask of. But I'm not going to go to a doctor that I feel unsafe at and uncomfortable at already and be like, I identify as non-binary. Please use they, them. Because what if she says back to me, I'm about to inspect your private parts and I don't know what you're talking about.
And you should only ever do what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
But maybe, for example, on your like press site,
You
could use the pronouns that you prefer.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah.
And then if journalists fuck it up, they fuck it up.
I think that now it has it.
It's been corrected?
I think so. But no, I agree with you that like, I mean, there's also the argument that like, there's so many people out there making that ask too.
Yeah.
That like, I don't want to be the person to educate.
Right.
Totally.
I'm not good at it.
Yeah. It's not
I'm
your
not
job.
Good at it. I'm better at being like, fuck it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not my job, but also there's so many people doing it right now and I feel so happy for them.
Yeah. Sure.
And I hear you though. And like I should maybe be more clear with like my family if I want them to do something.
I mean, let me be clear. You should only do what you want to do.
Yeah, but it's also I do feel comfortable like with my agents. That it's like a professional world thing too.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
I just
totally.
Do it's different environments.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I know you have lots of things to do today. So just quickly before we let you go, we're gonna do a quick round of the hot takes wheel.
Yay! That was so fun to talk to you guys.
That was great.
That was so
and
fun.
Now we don't have to get a drink because we just talked about our personal
I still
friendship
get drinks.
Shit.
Yeah,
can we still drink?
I know, what are you guys doing tomorrow night? Let's go to the woods.
Drinking with you.
Done.
Okay, here we go. Well, here, JW, spin the wheel.
Ooh,
give it a hard spin.
A hard spin. Oh, wait, let me do it again.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Hell
yeah. Okay, question is from at Kelly Edward King.
Shout out, Kelly, you're the man.
Do you think drag is an art form that perpetuates the male gaze, or is gender the butt of the joke, not women?
What?
Who wants to take this first? We'll be super fast, super hot.
Wait, do you think drag and art...
Is drag an art form that perpetuates the male gaze? Okay. So here's okay.
No.
Here's my hot take. I'm not going to think too hard about this. I think the point of male gaze, female gaze is always what the intention is. So drag is not about people dressing up to please mm-hmm. a man sexually.
Yep.
So therefore, I think it is not perpetuating the male gaze.
Agreed. It's a form of creativity. It's art. It's entertainment. I completely agree with you there. I don't think it perpetuates the male gaze.
It's not ever about what the thing is in and of itself. It's about its intention and
exactly.
purpose. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it. I just fucking agree with you guys. Yeah. That was great.
Great. Yeah. Good job,
fuck
everybody.
Yeah.
Hot take. My hot take is I concur.
All right. Julia Weldon.
Julia.
Do you want to tell us some big things you have coming up in 2019? Tease us a little bit at least.
I might be recording some new music that I wrote on my residency tour in Germany.
Okay.
Awesome. So I'm hoping to like work with a producer and record some new stuff. And like, again, I'm stepping back and being like, how do I want to mm-hmm. shape my career and release music? And I just feel like I wrote a bunch of songs and I should do something with them. And that's hard to like let them lie.
And you also, I believe, are part of a pretty big movie coming out. Do you want to tell us about that? Are you allowed to talk about it at all?
I'm like, technically not. But you know what? The female gaze heard it first.
Yes! Breaking news.
I booked us. The first thing I booked for my agent. They've been sending me out for all these awesome things. Funny you should ask, though, if I always go out for like non-binary roles. Because uh-huh. this is actually totally just a protester.
Oh.
Like, I don't, the gender is just me.
Not important. Ooh. Okay.
And not
the gender is me. I like that. Yeah. How do you identify? Julia Weldon.
I identify as my gender.
I'm an experience.
So it's like a really bit part, but my acting coach says there's no small roles in huge movies and it's going to be fucking everywhere.
What is it?
What is it?
It's the Joker film with Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, shit.
So let's all pretend like it's a big secret and no one's going to tell anyone, but I have a small role in it and I'll have green hair in it. So look out for it.
That is humongous.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
what month
so
is that
pumped.
Coming out?
It's actually coming out like a long time from now. Now it doesn't feel, it's coming out October 2019.
Okay.
What? That's
literally
terrible.
Tomorrow.
I'm praying
yeah.
that it's going to be everywhere because it's going to be everywhere.
It's going
to
be
and
everywhere.
And then maybe I'll be able to pay for my future child.
Hey.
Let's all cross our gay fingers that I book something huge in 2019 in
you
pilot
will.
Season.
You will.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's
put
gonna
it
happen.
Out there. You're
going
to
yeah.
do it. Fuck yeah.
Manifest.
Hell yeah.
Super crossed fingers and toes.
Thank you so much
Julia
for
Weldon,
hanging
your
out.
Your Instagram handle is...
At Julia Weldon. Weldon.
At Julia Weldon.
If you want to see some of that thirsty.
Thirsty.
There's so much thirst there, and also some cute dog photos. So.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, JW. Love
Thank
you
guys so
You're
much.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.